swearing on for the cabinet that I'll ask the president to dissolve the 32nd Dáil. I've always said that the election should happen at the best time for the country. Now is that time.
And therefore, if that is achieved, that you do have the possibility of creating greater growth in the society and creating better jobs.
Are we certain that we actually have the critical mass of public infrastructure and public service capacity to ensure that we can keep this golden goose that we have and that we can actually be the family that makes future generations better off?
Business at the ballot box. Be the voice.
Welcome back to Business at the Ballot Box, a special general election podcast series brought to you by IBEC, the voice of Irish business. In this series, we're talking about the things that the next government of Ireland needs to prioritise so that business can work better. And when business works better, society will too. We've been talking to business leaders, campaigners and experts, people like Carolan Lennon of AIR, Dalton Phillips of DAA, designer and elder care campaigner Brendan Courtney, Anne O'Leary of Vodafone, Danny McCoy of IBEC, Patricia King of the Irish Congress of Trade Unions, and many, many more. And you can catch all of those interviews and discussions in our earlier episodes. And if you have been enjoying the series so far, do follow or subscribe to it wherever you get your podcasts. Today, I will be meeting Pat McCann of Dalata Group about the secret to the group's success in 2019 and the need for the next government to provide greater support to Indigenous Irish companies. But the big discussion on today's episode is tax and spending. What should the next government do with that 11 billion euros that it has available to spend over the next 5 years? And at a time when we're facing a number of global threats to our economy, is that decision going to be a sustainable one? My panel includes Mary Minahan, Assistant News Editor of the Irish Times, Dan O'Brien, Chief Economist at the Institute of International and European Affairs. He's also a columnist with independent newspapers. And in fact, Dan will be making a very interesting argument a little later in the discussion that, contrary to popular opinion, the business environment in Ireland is really quite good. So make sure you stay tuned to hear why Dan believes that. And completing the panel is Gerard Brady, Chief Economist here at IBEC. And Gerard kicks things off by setting the scene for the discussion.
IBEC, the voice of Irish business.
So we're in a week where we now have all of the main manifestos out. All of them, or most of them, apart from two, are costed in one way or another. So people have all stuck to this amount of money that the Department of Finance have set out, this 11 billion over 5 years that the next government will have to spend in net terms.
Just 11 billion. Is this a very significant figure in terms of what we've seen in previous elections?
So versus what we've had over the last 15 years, it's probably the biggest since the 2007 election. So it's a big enough number that there are decisions to be made about what to do with it. And there's going to be pretty serious decisions facing the next government. So what we look at when we look at the external environment now, there's a lot of challenges facing the next government. Corporate tax reform that's coming down the line at the OECD, that we're very involved in IBEC over the last year or so and more, that's going to be a significant threat to the business model over the next 5 years. It's also got a lot of fiscal risks attached to it. You've got global trade wars and what's going on with the Trump administration and everything else, which Ireland has got caught up in and is at the forefront of because we're a small open economy. And then you've got things like climate change and the low carbon transition, which is going to cost money on one side, but on the other side you're also going to see taxes fall because we collect about 5 billion a year in taxes from petrol and diesel and everything else. So you're going to see big challenges for next government from a fiscal point of view and an economic point of view. And then as well as that, you have all of these demands. We've got about 6 billion in demands to implement SláintecCare over the next, or the lifetime of the next government, which is half of the money available to that government. And then you've got all the other demands in housing, homelessness, in terms of people's commutes, childcare and everything else. So the next government is going to find it really hard, despite having a lot of money, to please everybody.
And speaking of having a lot of money, Dan, you wrote something interesting recently that caught my eye, and you basically said that a statistic caught your eye, and you said Irish households spend more of their incomes on dining out and takeaways than those of any other country in Europe. Why is this significant?
I'm not sure it is massively significant. I think it's interesting rather than significant. But clearly, if you look at the other end of the spectrum, you have countries like Romania and Bulgaria, which spend very little on restaurants, and they are the poorest countries. So there's a pretty decent correlation between the amount people spend eating out and how wealthy they are. So I suppose it's a sign that Ireland is a pretty wealthy country.
But that is something that jars with a lot of people, because essentially we hear we're a rich country. But for a lot of people, it doesn't feel like we're a rich country. So there's a sort of a disconnect there, and a very significant disconnect.
I think that's characteristic of the modern age. People feel things very strongly. And if people feel things strongly, often there's no need to look at that in any sort of comparative way or, you know, find evidence to back it up. One great one that I constantly sort of come back to is that the claim that rural Ireland is dying. Where is the supporting evidence for that? Rural Ireland has its problems. Urban Ireland has its problems. But you need a bit of fact and evidence to back up those kind of claims. Ireland is a wealthy country. Things have improved a lot. And yes, sure, not everyone has. But this sort of thing, this feeling that everything's terrible, everything's going to hell in a handbasket, you know, I think this is a big problem for politics generally, because this level of anger about everything, and everything's a crisis and everything's a disaster, really kind of feeds into a cynicism and a negativity out there.
When it comes to this election, but probably many other elections as well, obviously, governments have a decision to make. Do they leave that money, that disposable income that's currently, let's say, to put it simplistically, going on restaurants, do they leave that in the householders' pockets to allow them choose where that money goes? Or do they take action to try and extract that money in whatever way they see fit to spend on what needs to be spent on?
Well, look, that's the meat and potatoes of politics. Do you use tax or do you leave people with their own money? Very clear, the centre of gravity in Irish politics is towards more taxation rather than tax cuts, and for the state to do more. For every tax cut being proposed, for every €1 in tax reductions Fianna Fáil is proposing over the next, during the lifetime of the next government, it's proposing to increase public expenditure by €4. Fine Gael is even more on the spending side. €1 tax cuts, €4.5, €4.5 for spending increases. And the smaller parties are even more in favour of more spending rather than tax cuts. So the centre of gravity in Irish politics has shifted very much to the left in terms of a bigger state and less focus on tax cuts.
Mary, you're seeing this as well. You're following this very closely.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing I think about this election campaign has been that the government hasn't taken that opportunity to splash the cash in a way that traditionally governments have done in a budget that takes place before an election. And the very simple reason is Brexit. And because at that time when Pascal Donoghue was pulling together his budget, there was still that fear of a hard Brexit. And so I suppose that stopped Pascal Donoghue from, it allowed him to avoid any big giveaways, really. And I think, you know, the basis of the manifestos now is, as Gerard says, on this 11 billion pot of unallocated resources. And from that, the government, whatever shape the government takes, will be able to allow spending to rise to whatever amount will allow taxes to be cut to some extent and put some money aside for a rainy day. But, you know, the interesting thing is the priorities and which parties prioritise which group of people, which societal groups they decide to help. And, you know, I think Fine Gael has been very, very clear that it is wanting to target what it calls the squeezed middle, and people, you know, can decide whether or not they fit into that category or not. I think Leo Varadkar's message, to simplify it, on the Clare Byrne debate, which a lot of people would have watched recently, is that you can have tax decreases and increased public spending at the same time. And of course, some people listening to that will think that sounds a little bit like having our cake and eating it. And that's a kind of a traditional message that a lot of governing parties tend to put out before elections.
And this increase, excuse me, and increased public spending, Ger, is something that Danny McCoy and IBEC is particularly interested in.
Yeah, so recently, I think traditionally business groups tend to be pro-tax cuts rather than spending increases. Probably there's a change happening when you talk to CEOs and senior managers in Irish business, that they probably reflect the electorate a lot more and are closer to the kind of views of the electorates that Dan talked about, this centre of gravity switching more towards public services and public infrastructure rather than tax cuts. And you can see that reflected in Danny's speech recently at the Institute for International and European Affairs, where he said there's a good argument that actually we're going to see over the next 5 years businesses look for more public infrastructure and more public services, which is what their staff are looking for, rather than necessarily for as much tax cuts. No matter what happens, the next government isn't going to be able to make everybody happy. Even if it does do tax cuts, it's not going to be able to do a huge amount of tax cuts. That's the reality of the fiscal rules and new fiscal framework that this election is probably the first where that's going to start to bind on what people can say in terms of giveaways. So we're going to see real choices that need to be made. The other thing that Danny said at the IIEA was about the Commission on Taxation. So we've been pushing very heavily for a new Commission on Taxation, because if you're going to have all these spending decisions and all those spending decisions being made, you also need to look at the other side of the ledger. There's going to be a lot of change in corporate tax, as I said, over the coming years, which are not just a challenge for the business model, but fiscally, there's also going to be a challenge. There's big pressure and big pressure going to come on as people's wages grow and they get pushed into the top rate of tax. More and more people are going to become acutely aware of the high marginal rates we have for middle income earners. And you also have, as I said, 5 billion that we currently collect in carbon taxes that are going to disappear over the next two decades if we have a low carbon transition. So how do you fill all those holes? And at the same time, from a business point of view, there's big pressure from the Indigenous business community to get a kind of an equal or a better tax treatment compared to the multinational community. When you see the last programme for government, there was lots of promises in previous manifestos, probably hasn't been delivered on to the extent that people want. So there's big pressure on to help those Indigenous businesses now, and that's going to be a continuing pressure as well. So we're saying you need to get all of society, in terms of groups, NGOs, the environmental pillar and trade unions and employers together in one room to try and discuss those issues and work out a way of squaring that circle.
Looking at the big two, and I think we do that, we look at Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael's manifestos, not to offend other parties or leave anyone else out, but just because politics is a numbers game and you can be pretty sure, as much as you can be sure of anything, that one of those two parties will be leading the next government. So they're both really promising massive investment in public services, cuts to personal tax and prudent fiscal policy. They're both promising that. Obviously, what parties do at this time is put their best foot forward. There's not going to be a thumping majority for any party. Again, I don't think so. So they're going to have to compromise. So this is their ideal scenario. This is what they would do if they were governing alone. But of course, governments aren't like that in Ireland anymore. And they'll have to coalesce. They'll have to do a deal. They'll have to compromise. So, in terms of Fine Gael, what they're saying is now that they would spend most of the available cash on public services and investment. And I suppose that is responding to people's concerns about things like health and housing. And, the ratio of tax cuts to public spending increases would be 4-1. So they're talking about spending $1 billion a year on health. That is a huge chunk out of the pot. But I suppose people would have concerns about we've been putting money into health for a very long time. It's the management of the health services that has perhaps caused the problems.
Dan, before we get to Pat McCann of Dalata, that idea of promising huge funding for public services. The next government is inheriting quite a pot of money to do that, but it's also inheriting quite a significant debt. Where do you believe the money, that 11 billion, should go? Should it be directed more towards paying down debt or doing something more prudent or investment in public services?
Yeah, look, my view is that when you have an economy that's growing as fast as the Irish economy, you've got a very big debt from legacy issues, that the government should be well in the black in terms of how much it's taking in, how much it's spending on an annual basis. If you have a big cushion, it means that if the economy turns down, which it could well do, Jared highlighted a whole series of risks there, and there are more, that if the economy turns down over the next few years, all of these pledges will come back on the table. So they're all predicated on the idea that the economy keeps going vroom vroom for the next 5 years. Now, we all hope that happens, but we can't be sure it'll happen. And as I say, if it goes into reverse, the money won't be there. This 11 billion is simply an estimate as to what will be there on the basis of a reasonably mainstream forecast for growth. But that growth is not guaranteed. So that, you know, this is one of the things I'm concerned about, that if we go into a period of even, you know, mild recession, that the politics will turn sour, people will feel the pledges that they've been given aren't being made, our debt position could deteriorate if international financing conditions change, which are extremely favorable at the moment, very unusual. If that changes, you know, things could, as we've seen before, things can spiral quite quickly. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it's certainly something that sometimes keeps me awake at night.
So during this series, I've been catching up with some of Ireland's leading CEOs for a brief discussion on their big business challenge in 2020 and what the next government can do to support business growth and business goals in Ireland in the next programme for government, and by doing that, in turn, support Irish society. So far, we've heard from Dalton Phillips of DAA and Carolan Lennon of AIR. Today, it's the turn of Pat McCann of Dalata Hotel Group, who's also the president of IBEC. Now, 2019 was a very successful year for Dalata. Pat tells us what drove that growth. He also talks about his novel way of financing the group's growth across the UK. And he also has a very strong message for the next government of Ireland about stepping up and doing more to support Indigenous Irish companies.
Business at the ballot box. Be the voice.
Just to set the scene a little bit, Pat, tell us about recent performance of Dalata. 2019 was a very good year for you.
It was an excellent year, and obviously we're in our close period, so I can't give too much detail. But I suppose all the targets that we set for ourselves in 2019 will be met or exceeded. So it's been a very strong year on all fronts.
What do you, and I'm sure this is a multifactorial answer, what do you put down to that success? What do you attribute that to?
I suppose we've always had a very clear strategy about where we want to take the business, and that hasn't wavered one iota. Despite the changes in the marketplace, particularly during 2019, we continue our expansion. So, for example, we are now constructing 10 hotels with another 2,700 rooms. That'll add almost 30% capacity to the company on top of a very strong trading performance. So being very focused on what our strategy is and not wavering from that has really helped us to get where we are today.
And this strategy is not just Ireland, it's very much the UK as well.
So there's a combination of two. So out of the 10 hotels that I'm constructing, two of them are here in Dublin and eight of them are in the UK. And the eight in the UK will be done through partnerships with people like Decibank, M&G, Prudential, Union Bank, Aberdeen Standard, who will build and own the hotels, and I'll do long-term leases. And that is, a very simple way for us to finance our growth rather than keep going back to equity shareholders.
I have to ask the question, how you felt about Brexit in Q4 of 2019 versus how you feel about Brexit today?
Well, obviously, there's a little bit more clarity beginning to appear, and that's helpful because it's not just the issue of Brexit, it's the uncertainty around it and what we might have to face. Because once businesses know what they have to face, they are fantastic at adjusting their business model to take into account whatever the world throws at them. The problem we've had up to this is, what are we facing? And until we get clarity on that, we will always have that little bit of uncertainty.
Speaking of challenges faced, we're asking everybody in this series, as a leader of a very, very large and successful company, what is your number one business challenge for 2020?
So I suppose there's lots of different challenges, smaller ones, I have to say, because thankfully we have no big issue to deal with other than making sure that our trading continues at a pace. But it's all about making sure that, I suppose, government plays their part in what we would term the support for Indigenous businesses in Ireland, And while we are very supportive of their FDI efforts, we do recognise that to spread the balance, government needs to look at how they're supporting or not supporting, in many cases, Indigenous business. So from our perspective, and from, I suppose, most Irish companies, they'd like to see a little bit more help coming through on that front.
What would that look like?
Well, I suppose there's lots of things around how taxation is looked at for startup businesses, how that could be encouraged. Because if you look at Ireland now, we are a nation now of small startups. And a lot of these are beginning to create lots of employment. And that is long-term unsustainable employment. And my worry is that it's kind of forgotten about. It needs more help and support. It needs to make sure that the, I suppose, regulation isn't overburdening. So there's little things like that, that government can do that can be extremely helpful to businesses.
What is the cost of not doing it?
The cost of not doing it is that capital is very liquid and it can go anywhere. And typically what will happen is that if there's a better option somewhere else and it's easier, that's where startups and entrepreneurs will go. And that's my worry, that we suddenly end up with a brain drain because it becomes too complicated and not that rewarding in the Irish context.
And as in your role as president of IBEC, how are you trying to convince government that this should be a priority?
Well, obviously, there's always lots of discussions going on with government and I suppose with the permanent government as well, so that we get our messages across again, very clear, keep it very simple, not to make things too complicated, but there is constant conversation, constant liaison going on between IBEC and all government departments.
Pat McCann, thank you so much.
IBEC, the voice of Irish business.
Pat McCann of Dalata Group and president of IBEC also. I am still joined by Dan O'Brien, chief economist at the Institute of International and European Affairs and columnist with our independent newspapers, and Mary Minahan, assistant news editor at the Irish Times, and Ger Brady, chief economist at IBEC. Continuing this discussion around Indigenous companies and the needs for support, as Pat mentioned, what's the IBEC position on that?
Well, clearly, we're in favour of supports for Indigenous business. I think there's big changes coming down the line. I've mentioned it a couple of times, this corporate tax change, which means that it may become more difficult to attract FDI into the country. Now, we could still do very, very well out of FDI, but it does make it marginally more difficult when tax mightn't be as big an attractor as it has been in the past. And if you look at the balance of the Irish economy, there's a lot of concern that we're over-reliant on multinationals. Now, we get a huge amount of positive benefits out of multinationals. I think sometimes people take people talking about over-reliance as being a bad thing. Like, it's a great thing that we're getting so many jobs. But on the other side, we've probably not seen enough progress on Indigenous business over the last 5-6 years. In the last decade, we've seen Indigenous business do a lot better, but it's been concentrated in a few sectors who've done really, really well. But if we look at the record of what's happened in the last 5-6 years, we were talking about manifesto promises, what happens if the money goes away, or what happens when priorities shift. The last programme for government and previous manifestos had really, really strong messaging on supports for Indigenous business. Probably were followed through in some ways, but not fully. On the tax side, certainly, which you know, I'm very familiar with, there was a lot of promises that weren't followed through on fully. Things around share options, things around capital gains tax, supports for investment or people investing in Indigenous business. So the same kind of questions now that we were facing at the last election, we're facing again. And a lot of businesses that we talk to, small Indigenous businesses and also mid-sized Indigenous business, are very frustrated at this kind of perception that they're kind of forgotten about. So we've seen across the manifestos lots of strong words again about how we're going to support SMEs and Indigenous business. But look, the experience of businesses over the last couple of years means that they're very sceptical of it, and they're going to wait to see a programme for government and wait to see implementation. And that's probably the key thing that we want to see. We want to see implementation. And part of what we're talking about in that Commission on Taxation model is that one of the issues, along with lots of others, would have to be that you sit down and try and plan out a 5 or 10 year plan for Indigenous business and how you get more growth out of that sector. And it's going to be a big challenge, particularly in a world of corporate tax change.
Mary, being optimistic and assuming that the next government will honour any commitments to solutions around and supports for Indigenous businesses, what are some of the supports that you are seeing that are being promised?
Yeah, well, I think in terms of messaging to business, probably people do hear an awful lot about housing and health, quite appropriately, and climate change. But in terms of the message that is coming towards business, you know, you've heard people like Michael McGrath from Fianna Fáil claim that Fine Gael has done precious little for entrepreneurs and for risk takers and for the self-employed. And he claims that Fianna Fáil's proposals would be widely welcomed by the business community. So obviously people make their own decisions about that. But then Pascal Donoghue of Fine Gael has claimed that Fianna Fáil's policy for reducing capital gains tax from 33% to 25% is dumb. He called it one of the dumbest moves he's ever heard. So that you can see now it's getting into the real nitty gritty and the kind of very unfriendly and unpleasant kind of way of doing politics. And, you know, a lot of us have been thinking recently about, obviously, Brexit. We can't escape from it. It's always hanging over us. And what Simon Coveney has said about Micheál Martin, and he said that he thinks he knows Micheál Martin better than most, and he's not the person he wants leading Ireland into the second half of the Brexit process. I think that's taken a lot of people by surprise, because up until then it was a relatively polite campaign and people were a little bit taken aback, A, by the words and B, by who said them, because Simon Coveney has always seemed like a very measured and mild-mannered person, and that was a very unusual comment from him on such a sensitive topic.
Dan, your thoughts on Indigenous companies and the needs for supports?
Well, let me say something. It may not be entirely popular with an IBEC audience, that the business environment in Ireland comparatively is pretty good. Corporation tax is low, employer PRSI is low. The way the labour market is regulated is a good balance between employers and employees. It's not like Southern Europe where, you know, employers can't do anything and you can't lay people off, you can't, hiring is expensive. And that's shown up in all of those sort of rankings about doing business in the world, whether it's the World Bank's ranking or the one I worked on for years, the Economist Intelligence Unit. Ireland does very well globally. It's a good place to do business. And there is no better hard indicator of that than the multinationals. They simply wouldn't be here if this was not a good place to do business. They've got a lot of other places to go that we have been so successful in attracting. Mobile, cutting-edge firms over decades is a sign that this is a good place to do business. So I just think that, you know, we need to sort of stand back and say, Ireland is a good place to do business already.
And so coming back to what you said earlier about people maybe not feeling rich, is it a feeling among the business community that it's not a good place to do business, but it's not a fact?
I think as an element of that, one thing that I constantly hear, I think you may have alluded to it earlier, you know, when I go around to, particularly outside Dublin, and talk to companies, there's a feeling that the multinational managers can pick up the phone and get a phone call straight into the Department of Finance or Finance Minister or anyone, and that the Indigenous companies just don't get the same, they are not listened to in the same way. And I think there's definitely an element of truth in that. You know, if the Tim Cooks arrive in Ireland, they're treated like, you know, royalty. And I think there's an element of resentment around that in the Indigenous business community. And I can understand that. I can certainly understand that. But, you know, like anyone, anywhere, you know, if you're paying tax, you feel like you're paying too much tax. If you're in a business, you feel like you're overregulated and there's too much red tape when you're filling out forms and whatever. I would just say, by on a comparative basis, you know, we get plenty of things wrong, but I think the overall business environment here could be improved, of course, always, but it's pretty comparatively good.
So on that, finally, on this point, do you feel that money is better, will be better spent elsewhere than supporting Indigenous companies in this election and in the next programme of government?
You know, I suppose I would say, you know, cut business taxes more rather than, you know, government devising ways for civil servants to help business. I, you know, I'm kind of a bit old school on that. I think the best way you can allow businesses to get ahead is by keeping their taxes low and letting the good ones get ahead, rather than getting this sort of thing where civil servants are helping business people. Business people know more about business than civil servants. Cut the taxes, that can get away.
A lot of people listening would probably be nodding along with that, I think.
Yeah. So would you like to add anything else on that?
Yeah, look, I don't disagree with Dan, actually. Ireland is a pretty good place to do business. I guess the challenge for us is that the global environment for us is going to change. That we've had a lot of luck, a really good run of luck, actually, that Ireland opened up its economy as the kind of as globalisation or this wave of globalisation took off. There's lots of threats around that. And the environment that's been so friendly to small open economies might be shifting a small bit in that context. And in a context where corporate tax change is coming, we need a hyper focus on making sure that we're not just good, but that we're much better than we currently are. And that's going to be a challenge. And if you look at the kind of measures of how many people start a business, how many new businesses are coming out of Ireland, we're not as high up on that as we should be. So we're great at attracting investment. And maybe the two things play off against each other to a certain extent, that you have lots of people who would otherwise be entrepreneurs are sucked into to bigger companies. But you need to try and give people incentives to start businesses, because there has to be that domestic base there. And it's a big issue in terms of inequality as well, that you have people who are on very high wages in one sector if you're lucky enough to get work in there, and in other sectors you won't be, you'll be on decent wages but not as high, and that's going to cause a lot of friction as well in society. So you need to get more companies and more workers in those companies with high productivity. There's a focus on it, but like, you need to have a hyper focus now because the global environment's changing.
And just briefly before we wrap up, you mentioned corporate tax changes coming down the tracks, etc. And I think it's probably worth mentioning that IBEC is in quite a strong position to see what's coming down the tracks because of the relationship there with the OECD.
Yeah, look, so I sit on the business of the OECD group that is kind of shadowing the OECD work on corporate tax. It's very, very, and it's actually symptomatic of everything that's happening in that, when I'm talking about the global environment changing on trade, tax is getting sucked into that world. We saw recently Steve Mnuchin and the French government have a fallout, that fall into trade as well. That trend and the shift in US government positioning vis-a-vis the rest of the world is really important for Ireland. The US is our biggest trading partner by a long shot, of individual countries, bigger than the UK. And the changes that will happen there over the coming years, the US's attitude towards openness in the world are going to be really huge for us. So that role we have at the OECD is interesting place to be, at least at the moment. Whether we can influence what the US government does is a very different question. Yeah.
Okay, so just to wrap things up, we will maybe just briefly go around the table, and I'm going to ask you for a hope, an ask, or maybe a prediction, if you prefer, for the next government. Mary, I'll start with yourself.
I'm very reluctant to make predictions because a lot of people make big fools of themselves doing that, but there's just one point I want to make, and that's, I've talked a lot about Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, the big two as we sometimes call them. We haven't really talked about Sinn Féin, and I think if you look at this election now, Sinn Féin probably won't be part of the next government, given what the leaders of the big two are saying, but the party, according to opinion polls anyway, is very much nibbling at their toes. So I think the interaction in future between the business community and Sinn Féin, and Sinn Féin and the business community, is going to be absolutely fascinating to watch. Maybe not a subject for this time, but for future administration. So if you look at Sinn Féin's manifesto, it's a dramatic departure from the other two. They're talking about huge increases in spending of $22 billion over 5 years, some very generous tax cuts, compensated by a slew of taxes against big corporations and the wealthy, of course. Who categorises himself as wealthy is a subject open to debate. So for me, that's one to watch for the future.
Interesting. Dan, final word from yourself?
A highly fragmented Dáil again, most likely another minority government. We'll get through with that if the good times roll, but if they don't and hard choices have to be made, having a weak government will start having a negative effect, and we could get into a sort of a negative feedback between politics and economics, which is something we certainly don't want to do.
And Ger Brady, any final messages or calls to action, let's say?
I won't make a prediction, but if we get another fractured government, new politics is actually very difficult from a business community who wants certainty. New politics, it doesn't provide certainty at all. So if the next government can provide some certainty by trying to engage with these Commission on Taxation ideas. They're in three of the manifestos, Fianna Fáil, the Greens and Labour, and trying to try and seek agreement on some of those issues. like they've done with Sláintecare and other issues, to try and take the politics out of them and give people certainty, it would be a huge help to business over the next couple of years.
Ger Brady, Chief Economist at IBEC, Mary Minahan, Assistant News Editor at the Irish Times, and Dan O'Brien, Chief Economist at the Institute of International and European Affairs and columnist with the Independent Newspapers. Thank you very much for joining us here on IBEC's Business at the Ballot Box today. And that is it for today's episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. And if you would like to join the conversation on Twitter or LinkedIn, use the hashtag BeTheVoice. And you can also email us at info@ibec.ie. And please do subscribe or follow the series wherever you get your podcasts, if you're enjoying it. In the next episode of Business at the Ballot Box, I will be joined by Catherine Duffy of Northern Trust, Maureen Walsh of Decare Dental, Cliff Taylor of the Irish Times, and Fergal O'Brien, Director of Policy and Public Affairs here at IBEC. See you then.
Business at the Ballot Box. Be the voice.